The best pilots in the world compete in what is called unlimited aerobatics. It's a beautiful and terrifying sport in which pilots push their planes and their bodies past the limits of endurance. Twisting through the air at hundreds of miles an hour, they pull through impossibly elegant maneuvers, any one of which could kill them. In fact, no sport on Earth kills more of its participants. The thrill, of course, is in direct proportion to the danger. Pilot Josh Ramo writes, every second is worth it, even the last one. Ramo is a competitive aerobatic flyer and a journalist. He's been foreign editor and assistant managing editor of Time magazine. And he's just published a book called No Visible Horizon, Surviving the World's Most Dangerous Sport. Ramo told Steve Paulson that to fly well, you have to become so afraid that you're not afraid at all.
You need to train your body just because the physical forces are so extreme that you're talking about pulling 8, 9, 10 Gs and lots of negative Gs, which for your listeners is sort of the outside Gs. It's that feeling of being thrown up against the strap as opposed to down into the seat. And that just takes – and they're very rapid onset, so it's very violent. And that just takes a while to kind of get your head screwed around. And then there's the kind of the deeper issue of training your mind so that you can instinctively not simply fly these maneuvers but fly them with great precision and make them very beautiful and link them all together and do it in a way that's, you know, transportingly elegant if you're flying properly.
You tell one story about a British pilot, Neil Williams, who suddenly found himself in a plane that was breaking apart and he had to figure out a way to land.
Yeah. It's a classic example of instinct flying, actually. Neil Williams was one of the greatest British pilots who in the early 1970s really revolutionized aerobatics. And he took off one day for a test flight in a Zlin 526, which was a Czechoslovakian airplane that at the time was really state-of-the-art. And it had had some routine maintenance. He got up, started rolling the plane, and all of a sudden heard this crack sound and saw the left wing folding up towards the cockpit, you know, just sort of like a hinge might fold up. And so immediately, just sort of firing off on all he had, which was instinct, he slammed the stick over and rolled the plane upside down. And it had the effect of kind of snapping the wing back out and into place. And he tried to, you know, very gingerly to roll the plane back right up again, and the wing started to fold again. And he realized he really had a problem, so he just sort of flew there upside down with his wing, you know, locked in place. He wasn't sure if it was going to come flying off at any minute, and he was not wearing a parachute because it was just supposed to be sort of a little test flight. And as he was sitting there upside down thinking, the engine started to quit because there was a limited amount of gas for flying upside down. And so Neil Williams, with the engine sputtering, flew the entire traffic pattern upside down, down the base leg, the turn to final approach, down to final approach, completely inverted. And then so low that he actually dragged his wingtip through the grass, he very quickly rolled the plane right side up and brought the plane down right on its wheels to land, essentially kind of controlled crash landing. And he did it fast enough so that it kept the wing from folding back up and killing him. And that was, you know, for many pilots, really sort of the classic example of beautiful instinct flying, of a guy who had become such a good pilot that in a way he had transcended the kind of laws of physics and the odds in flying, which meant that it was such a dangerous sport that eventually the odds catch up with you. And, you know, actually the odds did actually catch up with Neil Williams a few years later flying in Spain. He flew an old World War II bomber into the side of a mountain with his family on board.
Wow. So he did this miraculous maneuver, saving his life, and yet it caught up with him later.
Yeah. It's one of the things about the sport. It's really inscrutable in that way. It seems as hungry to kill good pilots as bad pilots. You know, flying has always been that way, particularly flying out on the bleeding edges where you, in the early days, had people just flying planes at all and then test pilots. You've always had the risk of paying a very high price for this incredibly beautiful activity.
What's the accident rate for aerobatic pilots?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that's hard to calculate. In a bad year, some people say that the accident rate, you know, is that it's killing anywhere from 2 to 10% of the pilots who are participating. You know, only about 4% of those accidents are mechanical failure. You're putting extreme forces on the plane, and so a lot of times, you know, you hear stories about planes just breaking up in midair. But really, the most common cause of accidents is people doing stupid things in airplanes. And even if you're a really, really good pilot, sometimes you just get up there and you get this kind of head rush, and you do things that on the ground, if I said to you, you know, would you ever consider, you know, snap rolling a plane 4 feet off the ground, you'd say, oh, no way, you're crazy. But somehow you get out there on a summer day and your family's watching and you think, gosh, wouldn't this figure be really cool? And it's the last thing you think.
What does it mean to snap roll your plane?
A snap roll is sort of like a horizontal spin. A spin happens when the wings of the airplane stall. You often hear pilots talk about an airplane stalling, and that doesn't mean that the engine stalls in the same way we think of a car stalling. What it means is that you're flying usually at such a high angle of attack, your nose is so high, that the airflow over the wings gets disrupted, and so the wing is said to stall. And what happens in a spin is you stall the airplane and then it gets really badly discombobulated and one wing kicks out over the other and you sort of find yourself wrapped up in this spinning spiral towards the ground, which used to kill a lot of pilots till we learned in the 1940s how to recover from it reliably. A snap roll is a horizontal version of that. So you're flying straight along, often at, you know, 160, 170 miles an hour. You pull very violently back on the stick and slam the rudder in one way or the other, and has the effect of very quickly putting about 7 positive Gs and 2 negative Gs on the plane and corkscrewing it through the sky in less than a second. It's an incredibly violent maneuver, but also if you're in it and you're controlling it, just gives you a feeling of really deep joy to master something this violent.
Is it physically painful when you're suddenly jerking the plane to move in a totally different direction?
Yeah, you get used to it. I mean, I don't find it. I mean, I think for everybody it is, and you kind of have different levels of it. And the thing that people tend to complain about the most actually are what are called negative Gs. And you might think about it. Positive Gs are essentially what happens when you pull on the airplane. So imagine that if you're flying a loop and you're flying on the inside of a loop, so you're pulling the nose back towards you and you're getting pushed down in your seat and you get pushed down, you know, 8, 9, 10 times the force of gravity, and that draws the blood out of your brain and grays you out. That's actually not that painful. It just kind of can be a little disorienting. The more painful is the opposite of that, which are called negative or outside Gs. So if you imagine, again, flying that loop, but the pilot, imagine the pilot being on the outside of that circle as opposed to the inside. And that has the effect of forcing blood up into your brain and into your eyes and produces a condition called redout sometimes, where you actually have blood vessels in your eyes start to pop. And the pain of outside loops is nobody's idea of a good time. But that's probably the most extreme part of it. I think, again, you don't ever get used to it. But you kind of manage it, and you're usually having such a good time up there. Most of the time, you're so focused on what you're doing that you sort of are more worried about other things.
You write about some maneuvers that just sound crazy. It sounds impossible, frankly. You talk about, for instance, when you were just learning how to do this, you went up with a former Soviet pilot, and he took you straight down 21,000 feet per minute.
Right. Yeah, I mean, 21,000 feet per minute, I think, is, you know, 200, 250 miles an hour straight at the ground. And that's a common, that particular figure was something called a hammerhead, where you are flying straight and level. You jerk the plane very abruptly to a vertical line, pure up, and you'll fly up. And then as soon as the plane kind of runs out of energy to run up, you tap on the rudder and kick yourself and you fly, you know, kick off to the side. You fly straight down at the ground. And what's amazing about this is not only, you know, the kind of general, and I expressed this in the book about the first time I did it, the sort of general astonishment that the ground is shooting up at you this fast and that you're getting closer and closer to the ground. You sure hope this guy's planning to pull back on the stick. But also the recognition that at some point you're going to have to do this in competition and that somebody's actually going to judge you about how precise your line is and how accurate that turn at the top is and making sure that the line you draw on the way up and the line you draw on the way down are of the same length.
So how close to the ground can you get if you're flying straight down?
You know, I mean, there are guys. Kirby Chambliss, who's the current U.S. national aerobatic champion, flies, you know, about as close to the ground as you can get. I mean, they talk about, you know, the zero-inch limit, which means that you're clear to do ground-level aerobatics. So that is, you know, you are starting and ending your figures at the ground. So you might imagine, you know, a loop that starts with the wheels on the runway and ends with the wheels on the runway. There's just a sort of level of confidence that people feel at some point who are flying that close to the ground, a kind of oneness with their plane that's really unmatchable and puts them in a position where they do things that to you and I sound objectively crazy, but do them in a way that is actually relatively safe. Relatively being the operative word there.
Yeah. You tell a story about this pilot you just mentioned, Kirby Chambliss. He was performing in an exhibition in China, and apparently he just stunned everyone with one of his tricks.
Yeah. They took a bunch of air show pilots over to China and said, look, we want to give the Chinese people a great demonstration of aerobatics. Why don't you come up with something clever? And the Chinese said, well, you know, we've got this part of China where there's this giant hole in the side of a cliff. Why don't we have a bunch of pilots fly through that? And so not only did Kirby, you know, agree to go over there and do that and fly through this hole at, you know, 250 miles an hour, but as he flew through the hole, he pulled up very sharply, came back around, actually looped his way through the hole, sort of like we were just describing the ground level loop. So he came through this donut hole, basically looped around the outside of the donut and came right back through again, you know, really to the astonishment of people. It was just kind of the ultimate demonstration of a level of confidence as a pilot.
Now, you do this. You are an aerobatic pilot. You have flown in the national championships.
That's right.
Why? Why do you do it?
I think for a couple of reasons, you know, actually probably for more than a couple of reasons. One is it is a heck of a lot of fun to be able to do these things in an airplane if you are passionate about flight. is a kind of transporting experience. It is a moment where you can't think about anything else except the present, and where you are just scrambling as hard as you can in the present to master not only the physics of what you're doing, but kind of the poetry as well as the position in the box and paying attention to the wind. And when you are so completely occupied with everything, you enter this just wonderful state where you will kind of break through to the other side and you find yourself not worrying about anything except flying the airplane. Somehow you've internalized your location in the box and the wind and the whatever figure is next, and you feel totally liberated flying through the sky like that.
Do you think about dying?
Yeah, you know, you do. I think it's one of the interesting things about the sport that it doesn't seem to, I think everybody accepts it. I think people accept it in different ways. For me, it was sort of a kind of belief that I wasn't going to have a problem, that I would be able to get out of any situation, that it was a real test of my faith and my ability to survive. But it's certainly something that's weighed on my mind, and I think there certainly is a moment where we all make the decision that it's a risk we're willing to take. Mermoz, who was a great pilot, French pilot, and a friend of Saint-Exupéry, the great French pilot, once said to Saint-Ex, you know, it's worth it in the end. Even in the crack-up, at that very last minute, it's worth it. And I think people who fly aerobatics, most people hope that crack-up never comes, but many of them believe in their hearts the experience you've had is almost worth it.
Joshua Ramo, talking with Steve Paulson about his book, No Visible Horizon, Surviving the World's Most Dangerous Sport.